Blog Talk Radio.
On a man-made lake, there's a sheet up in ice. With unskilled skaters, cut figure eight twice. At 16, uncut, direct from the coast. Head on assault, the result, death by the boat. In the vote, it spoke about the average lost commission that was seen by King in a prophetic vision. Like a plane crash from a bomb blast. Special broadcast, slot time with Comcast. They kept the jury quiet and now the riot performed. While satanic man now hanging his dorm. I swing on you fake radio personalities with Wuxia ratings. With hypes behind casualties of five shots. With low pressure water gunplay. Instantly slap your five like it's Palm Sunday. I fashioned the first tool from the elements the earth used. And built it to a complex network of communications. You're up against a hopeless situation. I screen every vehicle through enemy observation. Swarming unpredictably. We spread terror. Increase the fog significantly. Change the era. Check my wind pattern. It's heading west. Success is freedom. But failure can mean death. Human sweat and aim shovels. Dig up debris and rubble. Permanent damage caused by the double. You, now who, cowardly urge you to merge through and think the workers that serve you, the Sonic Marvel, who just dropped the next novel. Worldwide, rap elite, more than Marvel. It's a countless amount of MCs I saved, and them same niggas wanna swindle those gifts I gave.
Moments most sacred. Both species, they lay naked in the tombs of the oasis. Think back on niggas I ate with, spend the day with. Guns we play with, niggas I relate with. We broke bread. I heard through a vine, niggas work for the feds. Sent out secretly to take my head. I laid back and meditate to the words they said. Skipped town 4 months and used to dread. Had a friend tell my family I was dead. Returned at the last fall of the autumn leaves. Operate the plan accordingly, in case the feds are recording me. Sign all documents, using forgery, cause just a mere thought of me. I'm like Solomon, spoke bluntly, told the world I'm black and comely. Howled from the grave, hunt me, the smell of death upon me. I dwell in the hills like Gandhi, been in the presence of mad peasants. An old king, who sold everything, on the quest for God's divine. Slept in caves to get a clear mind, who prayed three times, when the moon lit, and when the sun rise. I met dwellers in the desert, talked to shepherds, been in the mouth of many leopards. Felt the death kiss of Satan's mistress. Walked through vacant districts, performed religions. Studied pagan scriptures to philosophers and physicians. On a cure mission, who hardened their hearts toward the weak, sick, and afflicted. Candles lit, gambled with a bitch who made me love her when I touch her. Saw paws, high claws, bees with sweet honey in their mouth. Have bitter stingers at their tail. Walked through the chambers of death, take a hold on to hell. Embracing her was like embracing the third well.
Andre, how are you?
Doing real good. You know, I was having a little technical difficulties going on here for a minute. Had to make sure everything was right. Yes. Okay. I'm looking like, wait a minute, what's happening here? Everything's going haywire. The computer, you know, we're very dependent on computers nowadays. You know, everything we do is technology driven. Without technology, I guess we wouldn't be anywhere, would we?
Unfortunately, I suppose. I don't necessarily know how I would do my job without technology.
Exactly. You know, it's the leader of all right now. It's the leader of the free world, technology. Someone needs to really concentrate on a book about technology. Besides, you know, like the movie The Matrix and The Third Eye, someone should actually do another movie that shows how technology just takes over us.
You know, that may be an idea for another urban-style comic.
Hey, man, I put it out there already. Somebody's about to get it if they're listening in on it.
I mean, well, you go back and flesh it out. We'll talk afterwards. Come up with another angle that maybe someone else has not thought of, and go from there.
Okay. We got Jerry Crafty's trying to get in right now, but for some reason he can't seem to put his pen in. We're gonna work it out, figure it out, get him on here some kind of way. But we're gonna speak on Jerry Craft a little bit before we get him on. And I hope he's patient. And he can hang on for a minute. I'm sure he is a very good brother. I've been knowing Jerry Craft now for approximately 10 years, I think, since I met him at the East Coast Black Age of Comics. I think it was back in 2002. Oh, no, I met him like 2005, I think, somewhere around there. But it's a real good brother. You know, I had purchased one of his books that I found was quite interesting, and it was called Mama's Boys, and bought it because my nephew was at that age where, at least my oldest nephew was at that age where the art style that Jerry Craft had presented was the art style that my nephew could identify with at the time, you know, because when you get into comic strips. And when you get into superhero-driven comics, they seem to be a little bit too hard on the eyes, in a sense, for little kids, because it's got too many lines and the artwork is just overwhelming for some of them.
Right.
You know, and they can't really identify to it. Then when you get into the story, it takes them somewhere totally different. But I really like the story that he had published, and he's been publishing books for a minute now.
Since 1995, I think.
Yeah, since 1995, he's been publishing, and basically he's been publishing as long as I've been doing dreadlocks.
And
we didn't have technology then, you know, but we all ended up coming into the same circle when we ended up meeting at the East Coast Black Age of Comics. Which was, my first time ever doing a black event, as far as comic books are concerned or comic book related items were concerned.
Shout out to EVAC.
Say it again.
I said shout out to EVAC.
Oh, yeah, shout out to them any day. You know, they started a whole revolution. Well, they didn't start it. Tertel only started it all, but they just carried the torch with the East Coast Thank Black you. Age Comics, you know, Motor City Black Age, Onyx Con, and so forth. You know, you have so many different shows now, Black Comic Book Art Festival in New York, as well as, you know, in San Francisco. They just, you know, it's just a slew of shows now. You really don't even know where to go now at this point. But I
appreciate the problem to have. You have like a multiple outlets that cater to art that is presented by people of color. So, and you know, it gives them like a marketing area that they can actually, you know, be able to bring their books to people who are looking specifically for that. So that's a very good thing.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to get ready to see if I can log Jerry in. It seems like he
okay.
just called in. Let me see if I can get him in. Jerry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing,
can
brother?
You hear me? I'm good.
And we
I'm
can
good.
Hear you loud and clear.
Good.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Good. Hi,
I see
Jerry.
What happened.
Hey, how you doing?
Ah, good.
My co-host, Cynthia McDonald.
Hey, Cynthia. Andre, you got that
hey.
FM DJ thing going on, all mellow and stuff. I'm like,
hey,
this is a little jazz in the background.
Hey, Jerry, you wouldn't believe the type of day I had. That's why I'm sounding this way.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like I should have been in the bed at like 8 o'clock, put it like that. But for some reason, you know, I'm still up because, you know, obviously this is the reason I wanted to set up this show or whatever. And, you know, I like to follow through with everything I set for. But how you been, though, Jerry?
I'm good. I'm good. Busy. But good, you know, I can't complain about that. And
right.
both my boys now are off to school, so I have even more time to work, which is a little interesting. You know, I'm still trying to get used to that.
Okay. Now, tell us, what really inspired you to get into doing Mama's Boys and your style? You do all types of art. Or whatever, but Mama's Boys really stuck out for me, or whatever, because that's the first thing that I identified with when I first met you.
You know what? Like I've always, I grew up. I love Marvel Comics. So back in the day, I wanted to grow up to be the next great artist on Spider-Man. You know, I wanted to be John Buscema, John Romita, somebody like that. And but I also like comic strips. So I was into, you know, Beetle Bailey and Brumhilder and that kind of stuff. And it was always like a treat to see, you know, my dad worked at the post office. So every once in a while he would bring home an out-of-town newspaper that would have like Quincy or Luther or one of these other comic strips that featured an African-American cast, you know, Wee Pal. And I always thought it was really cool. So, you know, I always used to make my own comic books, but they were always superhero things. And then
right.
I grew up in Washington Heights, right off of Harlem in New York City. And my
okay.
dad brought home this local newspaper, and it had a comic strip in there. And I used to complain about it all the time. I used to go, look at him, Dad. He's not funny. The proportion's off. This is wrong. This is wrong. And one day he basically said, you know, hey, he's published and you're not, so you need to put up or shut up. And, you know, that kind of inspired me. So I actually, I called up the newspaper and asked them if they would look at samples of a comic strip, and they said yes. So I actually created a strip called The Outside View, which is kind of precursor to Mama's Boy. So it was about, you know, about six or seven teenagers that kind of hung out. And a couple weeks later, I went up and I met the editor and showed my stuff, and he liked it. And a couple weeks after that, you know, my dad brought home the newspaper, and I never told him I was doing any of that. I opened up the newspaper, I showed him the comics that I hated, and then on the next page, I showed him, and there was The Outside View by Jerry Craft. And that's kind of what started it.
What newspaper was it that you were published in?
It was a local paper called like the Washington Heights Inwood Citizen or something like that. So half of it was because I love to draw and I love to write. The other half was maybe out of, you know, spite to prove my dad that I could do it, you know. And to be able to criticize his stuff. So if he hadn't, you know, basically told me to put up a shut up, and, you know, who knows what would have happened. But that was just kind of the ideal thing. And then from that, I worked on my style, and then I got into other newspapers. And then the big one at the time was the City Sun out of Brooklyn. And the City Sun and the Amsterdam News were like the two big black newspapers in the city. And that was really when I started to build some confidence and stuff and really get it the way I wanted. And by then it was, I had changed it to Mama's Boy.
Wow.
Well, it's a good thing that you actually spited your parent in a good way. Something constructive and not do something like really bad.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've always kind of been up for a challenge, you know. And I think, you know, and Andre, you'll know this. It's like when people tell you you can't do something or there's no market or, you know, that kind of thing, you really put it in your mind. You have to have a thick skin because otherwise, you know, you won't get out of bed half the days, you know. So whether, you know, putting together a book or putting together a Comic-Con or something like that, I think it just takes a whole lot of perseverance to keep it going.
Yeah, it does. I agree with you because, like you say, you have to have very thick skin. You have to be able to shrug whatever off your shoulders and just keep it moving because, like you say, you can always say, okay, well, maybe they're right, and, you know, just lose confidence in yourself and just stay in the bed and the world just going right on by you. And then later
Absolutely.
On in life, you know, 10 years later, it's like, man, I remember I used to do that, or, you know, oh, man.
Right.
I would like to get back into it, and by then, you know, the game has changed and no one's really interested in you at that point.
Right, and that was the thing that is surprising about that first Xbox that we met at, and I guess that was 2001, because I think they're having their 15-year, or they're right about 15 years, and a lot of those guys I never saw again. You know, like
right.
like there are people like Lance Toops and people like that I still see and hear, and Alex Simmons and Bill Foster, who are really active, and yourself. But I would say half those guys, I've never seen them again.
No,
you know,
I agree
so it's
that.
Not like they're doing books or anything, you know, so... you know, like I said, it's definitely not for everyone.
No, it's not. You know, you have to have the, what they say, perseverance or whatever. You have to be able to be focused, you know, and make it something that you really want to do, you know. And you really have to have a love for it. And I see in your work, you obviously, you know, have a love for what you do. And that's why, you know, you've been in this for so long. And at this point, no one can distract you. They can throw all kind of darts at you or whatever. It's not going to do anything but be deflected for the most part because of the fact that you've been doing it so long. And you basically, you know, are in your square. You're standing in your square, and no one can really even push you out of that square.
That has taken a long way to kind of do that because, you know, in a sense, like, I know all you guys and I see you all at different events, but there's a big part of stuff that I do by myself, you know, because, you know, like, even like I graduated from School of Visual Arts, and a lot of the artists who I went to school with don't have that, like, business sense, don't have that whole idea of deadlines and how, you know, if you don't get those pages done, it screws up the letterer, and then if he's not done, that screws up the colorist and that whole process. So like so many of us, I've had to learn all of it, you know, the inking, the coloring, the writing, you know, that kind of stuff. And have just kind of been used to being a one-man shop.
Now,
well,
Gary,
I agree,
I know,
you know,
how do you guys do? Oh, I'm sorry. I had a question. I'm hearing you talking about, like, you know, being able to do this for so long, and you know, some of the things that you have experienced, especially with some of the other illustrators and creators that are not necessarily, you know, creating these types of art anymore. What have you experienced, or what have been some of the challenges that you have faced to be able to persevere so long, you know, doing what you do?
I think the main thing is because I almost exclusively do books that feature kids of color, and I would say primarily African-American and to a degree Latino kids, I had stopped even looking to be published. You know, like, I have not had aspirations to be part of Marvel or DC, and I'm not knocking them at all, because, mm-hmm. I go in first online when Civil War comes out or Doctor Strange or some of those. But then a lot of the children's books, because I do a lot of those now, and I work directly with people to publish their books, because I just felt like the way that I wanted to present my work, like, I know what my audience is, between raising two African American boys and doing school visits and coaching basketball and, you know, working at community centers. You know, I have a really good sense of what they're into and the language that they speak. And, you know, I never saw a lot of that kind of stuff out there the way that I wanted to talk about it. You know, I think a lot of the stuff geared to our kids, more so in the children's books than comics, but, you know, from one aspect, the comic book, they were mainly sidekicks, and I never liked that. Mm-hmm. And then in the children's book, it was a lot of slavery, civil rights, that kind of stuff, and not anything that empowered our kids. Like, I think a lot of those things empower white kids more than they empower our kids. So that's why, like I said, I just kind of focused on creating my own product and getting it out there and finding my own audience, and not having to rely on anyone else to publish my stuff.
Did you find it difficult at first to find your own audience?
Yeah. And, you know, to a degree, it still is. And Andre, again, you probably know, when you talk about people who say they'll support you, as opposed to those that actually, you know, pull their wallet out or write you a check. It's a huge thing, you know. So I have, you know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 followers on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. And, you know, my goal is that if I can at least, you know, when I have a new product, get out there and say, okay, I'm going to do, like, if I can get 10% when my book launches and get like 500 sales immediately, that will really give back my print cost almost exclusively, like, immediately. And but it doesn't work like that. Sometimes I'll put something up and hope I can get, you know, 200 sales. And that first week, I might get 10, you know. And then as I build up, so I've found that I do a lot with personal appearances. That has helped me more than just an internet presence, you know. Like, even I've been doing this, I published my first book in 97. And if I go on tomorrow and say I'm going to do a new Mama's Boys book, I'll have 500 likes. But, like I said, that first week might only come up to about 25 sales. And then little by little, with a little bit more outreach and word of mouth, then it starts to pick up. But it's a really slow engine that has to get started. You know, I got to warm the car up and, you know, crank up the AC slowly and all that kind of stuff, and then it gets going.
That's one thing, you know, about the social media. Like you were speaking on, Jerry, you know, you may get 500 likes for your new book, and next thing you know, when it's time for someone to actually go to PayPal or the Square or however you sell the book, it's like you may see 10 sales or 5 maybe.
Oh, yeah.
And then it takes a while before people eventually see, oh, when did this come out? This came out 3 months ago.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why I've actually been afraid to do a Kickstarter, because, you know, I think doing a Kickstarter would either, I think it would tell me one way or the other what people think and how much support I actually have. And, you know, sometimes I'm not ready for that answer, you know, because
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. I'm not ready to learn the truth about that yet, you know, to that degree.
Okay.
So, you know, I usually just fund my own stuff. And that's one of the cool things about having, like, you know, print on demand, publishers,
right,
printers and stuff like that, is it just makes it much easier to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you bring up print-on-demand. I want to ask you a question. Do you think that we lose money? I was kind of doing some research on this recently or whatever, because, like you say, print-on-demand is the big thing right now. Do you think that we lose money with print-on-demand versus using a printer, like, say, in China, that can give you the same book for, say, at least a dollar cheaper in printing it, but they'll print out maybe 1,000 books for you?
Right. You know,
the storage aspect of it.
Right. You got the storage. See, I'm fortunate enough to have a garage. So when I did my first Mama's Boys book, I think I ordered close to 3,000 copies. And when I would do the subsequent printings, you know, I found a print out in Boston, and, you know, these are 96 page books, so they're pretty thick. They're much thicker than comic books. So I would take every seat out of my van except for the driver's seat and drive up there and come back with, like, you know, 40 cases of 50 books each.
Right.
You know, just stock them to the window. You know, it's interesting. I mean, the cool thing about print on demand is, like, with my middle grade novel, The Offenders, I can literally say, okay, I got a show next week. Let me order 80 of them, and in 2 weeks, I'll have 80 books. So I like that aspect of it. You know, I've not actually printed overseas. For every, say, 2-3 people that tell me a good story, someone else tells me about, you know, having to wait 16 weeks. And,
right,
you know, then he went over to China and he saw, you know, his shirts bootlegged and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also do try to do an American print shop. You know, there are times when that's important, you know, and I think that some of us have to put our money where our mouth is about keeping jobs here and supporting the locals and stuff like that.
Right.
But I definitely don't begrudge anyone for trying to save that extra buck, because, you know, if you got a comic book and you want to sell it for $5-6, you know, a dollar is a lot of savings. You know, so if you could pay $2 instead of $3, you know, that's a pretty hefty savings for that. So I can definitely get it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I look at that because, like, say, for instance, you have, like in Detroit, we have several different comic book stores. You couldn't sell the comic at the same price that you would sell on your website. It's got to be comparable to what the market price is as far as on the other
right.
books that are 24 pages or whatever. And a lot of times they may do a want to buy wholesale or do a consignment. If you're local, it'll be a consignment. And I seem to battle with that myself off and on because I don't really like dealing with comic book stores, really, except a few of them. And
mm-hmm.
because they all run that same thing as far as, you know, well, the price has to be this, and I find myself losing money that way. You know, that's why I had asked you that question.
Right, because most distributors want 50% discount.
Right.
I know, and I dealt with, you know, some major book distributors early on that wanted like 55% discount and then wanted me to pay for shipping. And
right.
I was like, you know what? Because I remember early on in the Amazon day, I was part of the Amazon Advantage program.
Mm.
And I was meeting a friend for lunch, and I hadn't seen her in years. And I go to downtown Manhattan, and she whips a Mama's Boys book out of her bag and asks me to sign it. And I'm like, where did you get this from? She says, oh, I ordered through Amazon. I said, okay, let me tell you what had to happen for you to get this book and now ask me to sign it. Okay, so the book costs $10. Right, that's my price, $10. So
right.
it cost me $3 to print it, so that leaves me $7.
Right.
Okay, Amazon wants a 50% discount, so they want to only pay me $5. So right now, that's $2 profit that I then had to ship it to Amazon, and at the time it was like, I think $1.75 because this is like 20 years ago, $1.75 to ship that book. Which means I make a whopping quarter. And I was like,
right.
you knew I was meeting you. Why couldn't you just say, hey, Jerry, could you bring me a book and I'll give you $10? And then I could have made $7 profit instead of
right.
a quarter profit and then still having to go to the post office and mail it to
mm-hmm.
them so they could mail it to you. So I mail it from Connecticut to Iowa for them to mail it to Brooklyn. For you to bring it and meet me in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I had to stop dealing with them in that aspect.
I understand. That's kind of like what I'm kind of getting at as well. And that's one of the reasons why I really, really appreciate the fact that we have the different shows that cater towards us that are...
Mm-hmm.
So that way we can get most of our profit as far as the books that we produce. You know, like Eggbox, for instance, you know, being there, you not only do you feel good because you're among a lot of people that are like minds or whatever, we all look alike, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Fact of the matter, you're getting a huge profit as far as your books, especially with the print-on-demand and that aspect. You come out winning that way.
Yeah.
Whereas if we didn't have the shows, it would be kind of difficult or whatever. You could still do pretty good or whatever, you know, because I know with the website and the internet, you know, if you already have traffic coming there quite a bit, they'll,
mm-hmm.
you know, let other people know what's going on, you know, with Jerry Craft and Mama's Boys
right.
and Offenders. They'll let people know, and, you know, people come to the site, and obviously you can sell and ship right out of your own house at that point.
Because I know I have people come to see me at Eckbach every year, and the first thing is, okay, what's new? Like, what didn't you have last year? And they buy it because my name is on it, and they know that it's going to be a certain quality and stuff. And so now if you buy 1,000 books, if you order 1,000 books, you know, if you hit the event that me and John Jennings and John Gales put on at the Schomburg, you know, last year we had 7,000 people come through. So you can sell some books there, you know, right? So you got that in January, you know, and then BCAF is that same weekend out in California. And then you got ECBOC, you got OnyxCon, you got Motor City Con, you got MechaCon, you got, you know, all these little ones popping up. So, you know, if you can hit them all, and, you know, the fees are much less than, you know, trying to get a table at New York Comic Con or WizardCon or some of these, and it's people who are looking for your books, you know.
Right.
So you really can, you know, constantly sell out your inventory and then look to produce new product, which is something that benefits all of us.
Yes, it does. I was so upset last year when I got to the airport and the guy told me, he said I couldn't make my plane, and I got there on time.
Yeah.
And I guess
you know, big, how the TSA big hall man, with all the tables, and there was one empty table. And I was like, so we poured the drink out for you.
It.
You're like, yeah.
Well, I'm sure somebody got the table or whatever was happy about it.
Yeah.
But,
yep.
Now this year is the same weekend as the BCAF in California. Is the same weekend as that?
Yeah, it always is. So basically,
okay.
Ours is Saturday in New York, and BCAF. You know, I don't remember if it's Sunday or if it's Monday.
It did look like it was a different day. I know it was. It's 3 days,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's definitely a different day. No, I think it definitely has nothing to do with Saturday, because I think last year John Jennings and David Walker took, like, you know, the red eye flight, so they hung out.
Oh yeah.
At our thing till about 4 or 5, and then went to the airport and then flew, you know, across the country. And, I don't remember if it's Sunday or Monday. We're talking to see what we can do, because we're going to try to do ours at the Schomburg maybe Friday and Saturday, just to add some more stuff, and then take the some of the crowd, so that, you know, it's just not 40,000 people on Saturday, you know.
What's going to happen, I can tell you that now, because Friday, you know, you got a lot of people that are working, and they may be able to get out, and they may not be able to get out, whereas Saturday, you know, just about 80% of the people there not working on, they're off on the weekends.
Oh, I know.
So,
yeah,
so you know,
because we had some school groups come through, so maybe the school groups can
come
through. Yeah, that Friday to, you know, like, lessen some of the load on Saturday. But, you know, we'll see.
Well,
but
I'll be out there
that
Friday.
That was an idea that we came up with. I was in Chicago with Turtel, and we were talking about wanting to do a Black Comic Book Day. And we set it that one year, and I had mine at Human Bookstore in Harlem. And, you know, we expected 15, 20 people. I think we had like 100 people. And the woman that owned the store, Marva Allen, was like, wow. This is a good event.
Exactly.
But yeah, and then the next year we did it again and had, you know, maybe 200. So So she was happy, but then they ended up having to shut down. And then I contacted the Schomburg, and they had also been in negotiation with both John Jennings, who wanted to do his Black Kirby exhibit, and Jonathan right. Gales, who wanted to do more of an academic approach to the comics with his documentary that he'd done. And
Black Superhero, White Scripts?
Yeah, yep. So they were like, well, we can't do three events, but can you guys kind of, you know, Voltron up and combine into one mega, one mega con. And that's what we did. And I think the first year we had like 1,500 and we were like stunned. And next year was like 2,500 and then 5,000. And then the fourth one was like over 7,000.
Wow.
Well, since you got Chanda, who was the Black Lion?
Huh?
I said, since you guys Voltroned up, who was the Black Lion?
Oh, who was the Black Lion? I think it was Andre, wasn't it?
I wasn't there. I wish I was there. You know, but for sure, I'm coming out there that Friday. I already know. So if you all are putting something on that Friday, I'll be there for that.
Okay.
I'm not going to mess around and try to catch a 6 o'clock flight and
right.
end up not being able to get on my flight.
That first one at Schomburg, like, I had no idea how it would turn out. So I wasn't even confident to tell people to drive in from Philly, you know, like Jamar Nicholas and Yumi and Akinse and those folks. And I was like, well, you know, you can come if you want, but, like, I'm definitely not twisting your arm to come. And, you know, I remember after that first, I still remember the smile on Steve Harris's face at the end of the day because he had done so well. He had that big Cheshire Cat smile on his face. And, you know, it's just getting bigger and better, so... You know, we're definitely thankful for that.
That's the whole game plan.
Yep.
That's cool.
When is that event going to take place, Jerry?
It's always Martin Luther King weekend. So this year, I believe the Friday is the 13th. And I think it's the 13th and the 14th next year, you know, this coming January. But Andre, definitely double check before you book a flight because I'd hate for you to miss it by a week. But yeah, I'm pretty sure. Friday.
Well,
this
is the same weekend as John Jennings, BCAF, because he just sent out some information last week, and it's usually that same weekend.
Right.
So I'm most
so
definitely
if ours is like 13th and 14th, and his may be like 15th and 16th.
Right. Exactly. Because that's the date I think I seen with the 15th and the 16th on his.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, make sure that you send us information so that we can post it for you for people who may be in that area or coming to that area would be interested in attending.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Jerry, can you kind of tell us the premise behind Mama's Boys? And as a matter of fact, let's get into the offenders. How did you come up with that idea and the concept?
So the offenders is the first middle grade novel that I wrote. And I had done a book years ago for my buddy David Miller called Khalil's Way, and that was about a boy who had a problem with a bully. And whenever I would go and do, I'd go to these like PTA meetings or stuff about bullying workshops, a lot of parents would get up and they'd say, you know, a lot of the kids and the parents who should be here aren't here.
Mm-hmm.
And what that meant to me was that there were so many kids who didn't realize that they were bullies or wouldn't admit that they were bullies. So I said, you know, what I want to do is instead of doing a book that is about a kid who is bullied, I'm going to do a book about kids who kind of are the bullies. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this middle grade book, and it's five kids who get zapped. They get these superpowers. But instead of being really cool like Black Panther and Deadpool and Spider-Man, they end up looking like the kids who they pick on. So the one kid who picks on the kid who's a little overweight gains like 50 pounds. And one girl is like, oh, you're a string bean. You're so skinny. So she gets like spaghetti thin. And one girl is like, you know, always calling kids mousy. So she shrinks down to the size of a mouse. Another one picks on kids with braces, so he gets these two big metallic kind of buck teeth. And now they have to try to save the school, but now they get teased and picked on. So I've realized that one of the things that happened to me growing up when I did was when I was coming up, like so many of the Saturday morning cartoons had lessons. You know, if I was watching like Fat Albert, you know, even though it was funny, there was always a lesson behind it. You know, treat people with respect and, you know, don't cut school and don't steal and that kind of stuff. And then in between those, we had stuff like Schoolhouse Rock and Multiplication Rock. So that was these cool songs, but then they taught you stuff that to this day, if I have to kind of think about what a conjunction is, I like sing the song because I still remember the song. And then there were even like little things about healthy snacks and stuff like that. So, you know, I think that really stuck with me. So that's why so much of what I do has some kind of a learning component to it, you know, whether it's morals or work ethic or bullying or literacy, you know, because the mom and mommy's voice owns a bookstore. So she's always trying to get her kids to read. So, you know, most of my, like, it's hard for me not to do something that doesn't have some kind of, you know, a learning thing behind it. So with the offenders, you know, when I would always read it to my kids as I was writing it. And when they were younger, whatever I read to them, like, oh, Dad, that's great. And, you know, then they became teenagers and I'm reading them part of the offenders. And my son Jalen goes, wait a minute, Dad, read that back. And I read it back. He's like, no kid would say that. I'm like, well, how do you know what a kid would say? You're just a kid.
That's what.
I get it, yeah. And I was like, you know what? Who's better that will help me out with that? So, you know, I wanted to have the kids playing Xbox, right, in the book. And, you know, I didn't want to do something corny that would show my age about, you know, the kids playing Pong or Space Invaders or something like that. So I put my kids in charge of that. I was like, okay, you know, what are they playing? Like, all right, Dad, they're playing Call of Duty and they're 10th level prestige and they do this, and they do this, boom, boom, boom. And then they, you know, weren't in middle school at the time. So they would come home and tell me things that happened at school and how different kids reacted and that kind of stuff. So I felt like it was a really good mixture. So I ended up getting a really nice level of like realism as far as how the kids are and their language and likes and dislikes. And then using, you know, my sense of humor and, you know, the superhero theme and all that kind of stuff. So I ended up making them co-writers and put their picture in the book and put their names on it. And we toured together and did some TV shows, and we signed the offenders at Jeff Kenney's store, the guy that owns Diary of a Wimpy Kid that created that. He's got a bookstore. He had us come up last summer. So it's been a good run.
Well, that's good. That's great to hear.
Did that also inspire you to even work with some of the charities that you've been working with as well?
Yeah, you know, and that's another thing that is weird even for me. It's like, you know, so I created Mama's Boys like in 92, I think. And I met this woman that used to do these supplements for the Daily News in New York. And I think the first one she approached me about was they had one for Kwanzaa. So I did these Modest Boys comics that were about Kwanzaa. And then the next one, she was like, hey, you know, they have the West Indian Day Parade Labor Day. It's like, okay, so I did some of those. And then there was one for Harlem Week. And then just out of the blue one day, she said, hey, well, now we got a budget and we're going to do these aid supplements every 4 months. So we want you to do a Mama's Boys comic. And I was like, wait a minute, you want me to do a Mama's Boys comic on AIDS? He's like, yeah. And that one kind of bugged me out because, you know, a comic strip obviously has to be humorous and have some kind of punchline, but I didn't right. want to make light of it. And I really racked my brains on it. I finally came up with something, and people really liked it. So I think I did maybe 4 of those aid supplements. And then when I did my first Mama's Boys book, you know, I never had the dad in Mama's Boys. And people would always ask, well, what happened to dad? And I knew I never wanted it to be like in the black sitcoms where, like, oh, well, dad went out for cigarettes 20 years ago and we haven't seen him since. You know, I didn't want him to be one of I didn't want him to be one of those kind of dads. And then I used to get this newsletter, like a email newsletter, and one of them talked about how diabetes was running rampant in the black and Latino communities. And I called up the American Diabetes Association, and they had an African-American program. And I said, hey, you know, well, how would you feel about working with me to do some stuff for you guys? And they actually hired me and made Mama's Boys as their, like, spokespersons for the ADA's African American program. So I ended up writing that into the overall theme of the comic strip, where dad passed away from complications due to diabetes. So a few times a year, you know, I would put something in for when they had their fundraising walk and, you know, healthy eating tips and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was weird that, you know, like first is diabetes, then it was AIDS, and then I've done Mama's Boy strips for, you know, organ and tissue donation and for the American Council of Fitness and Nutrition. So somewhere down the line, I became this guy that could make really serious stuff into comic form. I even did a comic book for the Lynx that was about a girl with leukemia. And I actually wrote that into one of my Mama's Boys comic books, like a full-color comic book about a girl with leukemia. So, yeah, it's really weird how that's happened, but it's become kind of one of my strengths, I think.
Ooh. Did that also lead to some of the awards that you won for your tips and your books?
Yeah, I won a couple. I got a couple of plaques from the American Diabetes Association. And then I won 5 African-American Literary Awards for the strip. And then I've gotten, you know, all the kind of acknowledgments for some of the different programs that I've worked with. But like I said, I really can't get that whole teaching component out of my work. And, you know, like I kind of accept it now. I'm like, you know what, that's what I do. That's kind of what makes me tick. So whether it's literacy or education, I had done these strips on teenage pregnancy. So, yeah, I've done, like, quite a bit of stuff along those lines. So, like I said, when the bullying thing came, that was just kind of, you know, that was easy. You know, once you do a comic strip on organ and tissue donation, bullying's a piece of cake, you know?
Right. There's a lot of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
Even to this day, it seems like bullying is forever.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that that's one of the things where it's always like looking for new stuff, you know, and new ways to do it. So I'm thinking about, you know, one of the things I want to do is a Mama's Boys graphic novel, a color graphic novel. So that's one. And even thinking about taking the offenders, and because right now it's a 200-page middle grade novel, so I would like to do something that makes it more accessible to younger kids. So I'm trying to decide if that is a coloring or a you know, a graphic novel or what, you know, what it would take, or maybe even just making the book a lot shorter. You know,
for little kids.
Yeah, for younger kids, absolutely. Because I like the story a lot, but you know, 200 pages is a lot for some kids, and I was one of those kids that would have been a lot for. I would have never picked up a 200-page book when I was, you know, 8 or 9. You know, but some of these kids.
Mom,
are looking,
what's this right here?
Yeah, some of them, they got that 900-page Harry Potter book.
I cannot imagine an 8-year-old not picking up a 200-page book.
Yeah, but, you know, those Harry Potter books are like 600-700 pages, you know?
That's true. You know, but, you know, their parents are probably reading those books to them or helping them along. You know, as far as Harry Potter is concerned, they're probably reading them together. That's the only.
Yeah, some of them, but I've seen some of these kids, and the book is bigger than they are, and here they are, walking with it under their arm, and I'm like, wow.
Hey Jerry, real quick, I have 90 seconds left on here. I would like for you to inform everyone on how to contact Jerry Kraft and get access to everything that you have to offer. And even if you want to share the information about BCAF, that's cool too.
Okay, so yeah, my website has all my stuff, and that's just Jerry Kraft, JerryCraft.net. And everything is my name. So Facebook, Jerry Kraft, Twitter, Jerry Kraft, email is JerryKraft@AOL.com. And anything else I'm on is easy like that, Instagram, whatever. So that the Schomburg Black Comic Book Fest will be definitely January 14th, which is Saturday. And we are definitely going to see if we can add the 13th as well. And, that's the big stuff.
Cool. I want to thank you for coming on the show this evening. Next time I'll be more lively. That's why we needed an hour and a half for this show right here, because you really have a lot to say. And
oh,
we really appreciate having you on.
Recline the sofa and take a nap now, but that's cool. I know you deserve it.
No, not a nap. I'm about to hit the bed.
Oh, I hear you. Okay. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And
hey,
good luck to you and your work. Yep.
All right. Thanks and good luck, brother. We'll see each other again soon.
Sounds good.
Bye.
Have a good one, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you all for tuning in.
Life, where would it take us? Into the life that's stronger, don't break up.